Welcome to this episode of Wild Virginia Virtual Coffee Talk. Today we chat with Thomas Culligan, who is a recent graduate of the Wild Virginia Clean Water Advocates Program. We discuss why clean water is a human right.
Is this your first sort of engagement with Wild Virginia?
Quote-unquote professional sense, yeah. I mean, I've been a member of Wild Virginia since we moved back to Virginia in 2020. I thought it was a good way for somebody like me, who I like to be in the outdoors, and I really liked the messaging that Wild Virginia was pushing out and the education that they had via social media.
Cool. That is all my department, so that's really
Yeah, it's great.
So, well, and if you're an outdoors person, what kind of things do you like to do outside?
When we first moved back, I mean, I'm a Roanoke College graduate, so we spent, and is my fiance, who's also a Roanoke College graduate, hiking. I love to get in the mountains, especially here in Harrisonburg. We've got the National Forest and the National Park. Recently, like the last year and a half, it's been cycling and specifically like gravel riding. So like the dirt roads that we have, it's a little bit safer. And we lived in Charleston, South Carolina before this, and that's kind of where the tie-in with water comes from. And then I grew up in the Northeast in a coastal New Jersey town. So water was, I lived 10 minutes away from the beach. So we were there a bunch. Just seeing how like my two worlds from the mountains to the ocean, how that kind of coexists and seeing the best of both worlds, or having the luxury of when I go home for the holidays, I'm 10 minutes down the road from the ocean. And when I come back here, everywhere I look, I've got mountains.
Like talking about coexisting and like pulling from your background and where you grew up and where you live now, I love that. So in Harrisonburg, my go-to hike was Fridley's Gap.
Yeah, the hard one.
I do love Fridley's Gap. I used to go camping at Switzer Lake.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Hone's Quarry.
Yeah, Hone Quarry. That one's good. Yeah. I was there last Saturday doing like the big hollow loop. It's that one was when we first moved back during the pandemic and I didn't have the national parks pass yet. That one was so easy because there's so many things you can do. There's not this summer because of the drought, but the runoff from the waterfalls that you could go into when it's super hot. And yeah, the national forest is what I really fell in love with when we moved back here, just because it's so free and it's so rugged. And anybody can go there. It's our land, whereas the national park is, but like when we first went in there paying like the $15 to get through, but then we kept going and we're like, okay, well, $55 for a parks pass, like that pays off. We did the math, like pays off in four trips. And it's like, I think in 2021, 22, I think we went to the park like 50 times. So it's like between riding our bikes on Skyline or taking our dog for a hike or going to make like a backpacker's pantry to watch the sunset. I was like, shoot, it's 30 minutes from my front door. Like, I'd be a fool to let this go to waste.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, just being at JMU, like, you are speaking my love language. Like, the National Forest is why I fell in love with the outdoors. And honestly, when I moved to Charlottesville, why I joined Wild Virginia. Because at that point, that was our sole focus, mm-hmm. was monitoring the projects that were proposed to happen there. So the Jefferson and the George Washington is kind of what we focused on. While today we're expanded to basically the state of Virginia. Right. But no, that's totally my background and sort of my engagement with the organization. So tell me a little bit about how you're liking the program and what you're learning and what your hopes were for when you applied and kind of all that.
Yeah, it was one of those things where I didn't know about it at first. And then I think you guys put out on social media like the last call. And I think I got my application in like 2 days before it was done. So I was like, I'm glad I saw this, because I've been like, after being a Roanoke College graduate and being in Southwest Virginia for a while, and then the Mountain Valley Pipeline getting pushed through, in my opinion, unconstitutionally, I felt really lost, as if like something that it started when I went to college there in 2014 and seeing the no pipeline signs, and then learning about it as I got older and understanding like the history of Appalachia coming from the Northeast. Where to me, like, I wasn't aware of, and it sounds ignorant, but how we got our energy. And then to realize, oh, it's a pretty dirty process, and people in my new home got taken advantage of for a while. And then noticing how much that Wild Virginia posted about the Mountain Valley Pipeline. And to me, that was like my line of education, that Appalachian Voices and all the other folks that are in your guys' line of work that work together and given me the tools to be able to call a senator or call a congressperson or call a state representative and voice my opinion for a place that I love. I think I've talked in the last class at how when we went back to Roanoke in August, you can see the path of the pipeline from campus. And that was like a gut punch of that's where me and my friends would fall in love with the mountains. Or we had 30 minutes after class and we were done for the day and it's 15 minutes to Appalachian Trail from Roanoke. Now they're boring under the AT. It's one of those things where I wanted to turn my anger into action because I got tired of just doom scrolling all the time. It's like, okay, well, I'd like to learn more. And then my fiance is a lawyer, so she can talk about the legal side of it. But to me, it kind of just like goes over my head and I can parrot it back. But to be able to take what she's told me and learned in law school and in practice now, and then have somebody like Jacqueline and Dave give like the real world experience of this plus this equals that. And then even just the learning how the Forest Service works, how the government agencies work and their purpose and what they were established to do versus what they actually do, and being able to be an engaged citizen to look at that or to be on a bike ride and see an impaired body of water, take a picture of it, or and then call somebody from either the state, the town, and not just be able to be like, hey, this doesn't look right, to be like, hey, that's point source pollution coming from right there. It feels good to be doing something. And again, I mentioned it before, I'd like to have children someday and I'd like to take them to the national forest or take them paddleboarding or stuff that we love to do. But that can't happen if we've got wildfire smoke that chokes us or we have dirty water. We'll never be able to catch a trout because there won't be trout streams because we don't get rain. And even going back to how I grew up of I'd like to take a child back to my mom's house and go to the beach and teach them how to surf, or like where you can see New York City from the beach. Like the stuff that I had as a kid, I see trending the wrong way. And I was born in January and we used to always get snow on my birthday. And I think this past year was the first year in my life that we've never gotten snow. And I'm 100% a winter person. I'll trade the summer for the winter every day of the week and twice on Sunday. So the sea, and again, we don't get too bad of winters down here, but even in Roanoke, we got snow every year. And it now up in Harrisonburg, we definitely get more snow than Southwest Virginia, but I don't know. I've decided to go down this path because I think it makes me feel better than if I didn't do anything. And if the scientists are right, I think Jeremy Jones, who's the founder of Protect Our Winters and an amazing snowboarder, he's got a saying of, if I'm wrong, everybody gets cleaner water, cleaner air, and a better future. If the climate deniers are right, well, we're not going to be around much longer. So it's kind of a, not a moral thing, but it just feels right and following the scientists because they dedicated their lives to it. And I'm just here to talk about it in my community to be like, hey, this doesn't feel right. Or I'm only 27, but I still remember how cold it used to get. And now we're getting 70 degree January. I don't care where you are unless like you're in Miami, but up in the Northeast and in the mountains, we shouldn't be getting that.
No, totally. And I mean, that resonates with me so much. And why I joined Wild Virginia initially, I had this love for the outdoors. I had this love for a future family. I wanted, you know, being outside is something that I grew up in. I did my practicum at a wilderness school and lived outside. Like, I love being outside. And so for it to be dirty, I needed something to, you called it turning anger into action. I needed a productive way to feed some of this, you know, crazy hippie, like stop using the plastic and, you know, actually do something about it. So I love that. And I love hearing that Wild Virginia's, because that's one of our pillars, is being able to educate and mobilize people to feel like they can do something about this at the individual level, because it does seem really daunting when we have some of these, you know, frameworks and processes in place where it's like, it's a system that I don't really know how to stop. It's just, you know, poor little old me. Yeah. How am I supposed to do that? So I love hearing that. And you've talked about this a lot with, you know, future family. You love being outside. You love outdoor recreation. Why is clean water just so imperative in our community for the future of us, in your own words?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, that's the cliche saying, like, water is life, but that's true. Like, anybody who tells you that it's not, they're not going to say stupid, but they're ill-informed, because what is our body's 90% water? And if anybody's ever been dehydrated outside or playing a sport, you can understand how vital water is. But even, again, going back to where I grew up in the saltwater area, or dealing with mostly saltwater, to come in here and having the freshwater streams. I have a bunch of friends that are fly fishermen in town, and you can talk to them and it's like, yeah, I mean, you're not seeing the way it used to be, or the overstocking of trout into the freshwater and the denigration of the habitats. And selfishly, I love to garden. So if I don't have clean water or like good rain, my water bill is going to go up, or my crops aren't going to sow as well, and then we're not going to have tomatoes, and that's a selfish thing. But thinking more of the farmers in Rockingham, and with it being the most agricultural county in Virginia, those are the people I buy my food from at the farmers market, or the people that ship food back home or across the country, that my mom eats Virginia, like whatever we export to the Northeast. And I worry about that, and people like to complain about how expensive things are, and it's try to keep my opinions to myself sometimes, but it's also like, yeah, man, but it's going to get more expensive if we don't have clean water, or if clean water is costing $20 a bottle. And again, plastic bottles is part of the problem, but I'm just afraid of what the future looks like in a drier world with less access to clean water. And clean water shouldn't be something that the privileged have. It should be everybody should have it. We should be able to go into the national forest and go to Mossy Creek and be able to, yeah, maybe bring a water filter just to be safe. But at the end of the day, like, if you're out there on a hot hike and you want to splash some water on your face, you shouldn't have to worry about getting Giardia. Or if I take my dog into the national forest, I should be able to let her go into the stream to cool down and not have to be like, oh man, like, is she going to get sick? Is she going to get some sort of disease? Which again, we have to worry about just because we're in such an agricultural and cattle driven community. But without clean water, there's nothing we can do. You don't have those natural wonders in the streams. Or I went through a section hike of the Appalachian Trail in the national park, or yeah, the national park, and just the little ecosystems that live there that make it what it is. And it gets to the whole point of biodiversity, of you can have a trout stream, but if you don't have the flies that are flying on top of the clean water or the cold water, we're not going to get the trout that we're used to. We're going to have more and more of these fishing bans, which at the end of the day, so like I mentioned before, I'd like to take a son or daughter of mine into the national park, teach them about being a good steward, and also be like, yeah, you can, this is where this trout spawns, this clean water that flows downhill from the national park to our house. If that's not clean, you're going to get sick. And it's a human health crisis waiting to happen. I could go on and on about it, but outside of the recreation side of it, of like, yeah, when I was in Charleston, I'd go paddleboarding a salt marsh, and there'd be dolphins like diving in front of you with a baby dolphin that I've never seen before attached to the mom's dorsal fin. And those are the things that it's like, holy cow, like, dolphins are cool and I've seen them from afar, but to be right there and to hear them like surface and blow out of their blowhole, and it almost felt like, again, not to be too much of like a granola crunchy kid, but it almost felt like they were coming and saying hi. Like, they could tell that I was just out there exploring, like respecting their space. And I think if we think of that way, of like, when you're in the mountain, respect it, clean it up, pack in what you pack out. Not everybody's perfect. So if a wrapper falls out of your pocket, that's okay. Just if you see another one, pick it up. But from a person standpoint, like my water bottle right here, I just walk out to the water fountain in Godwin Hall and fill it up. I don't think twice about it, but there could be a time where we're in a boil water, we're in a this or that. And not to be morbid, but it's something that I really struggle with, of like, if we have too much agricultural runoff, what's going to happen in our streams? What's going to happen in my drinking water? When we get a big rain bomb, because we're not getting the normal, like, you know, 5 o'clock rainstorms that come through the valley and are just like a 30, 20 minute drizzle, but enough to refresh everything, then all of the sewer systems are going to overflow. They're going to flood. And it's just, it's a recipe for disaster that is avoidable. And again, like we've talked about before, you can see it coming. Like, we know what we got to do. We know what we have to improve. And for clean water to not be number one priority, it just seems silly. And it's something we've taken for granted for too long, of like, yeah, you turn the tap and it's going to come on. but we've been in a drought since June and we need 6 to 9 inches of water to revive our groundwater. I don't think that's being talked about enough. There's what are we going to do? We can't supplement the water we don't have. Look at what's happened out west. And that's something that I've never thought was going to happen on the East Coast because we're in a deciduous rainforest. It's supposed to rain. And as you know, we get rain usually almost every day during the summer, just for 15, 20 minutes. And we didn't have that. Encompassed with 100 degree heat for a week. Yeah, there's going to be evaporation. So yeah, that's a long answer to why clean water is important, but it's a very huge connection between liking to go outdoors and also liking to reach into my pack and be able to drink some cold water that's clean that I can filter if I have to. Or you've probably been out in those situations where you just almost dive head first into the stream because you're so thirsty or so hot.